So what does wellness mean to you?
Welcome to Wellness Wednesdays. I'm your host, Eric Clard. This week, we have another special guest live from downtown Montreal. We have a gentleman that I've known for a few years now. A very gentle soul, a great guy that I've actually got the chance to teach with a few times, a former ballet star, and one of the guys I really respect in terms of the yoga world. And I really like his approach to things. Without any further ado, Julien Gagnon, welcome.
Bonjour, hello. I wouldn't say ballet star, but yeah, ballet dancer is good.
Yeah. Well, anyone that can do this stuff is a ballet star to me. So
good.
Yeah. People don't know me as a ballet dancer, star, anything. So trust me, I think most people, and especially if they see some of the poses that you've done, you're the star in our books. So we're going to talk a little bit about your approach to yoga, your athletic pursuits, your running, and all that stuff. So let's start at the beginning.
Yes.
How did you get into like ballet, yoga, all that stuff? So give us like kind of the Cole's notes of your...
I guess I should start with in chronological order.
Yeah.
You know, so I've always moved when I was young. Always was into movement. My parents always encouraged me to move. They put me into gymnastic. They put me into hockey, into baseball. I mean, we've tried it all. You know, like when we were kid. Of course, hockey was not my big one. Baseball, I was afraid of the ball. And so,
that kind of defeats the purpose in baseball. Yeah.
So swimming was always good. Gymnastic worked well. What other sports? Or did we try soccer? You know, all those sports that you do in small communities and stuff. But the big one that stayed was always swimming and gymnastic. Then gymnastic, I stopped when I was a 10 or 11 because it was hurting my knee. I kept swimming. And then it's very late, actually, that I found dancing, because I was always kind of scared to go into ballet school and everything because I was from a region. So I didn't really want to...
Where did you grow up?
In not a region, but I was in all.
Okay.
So not a big city, small ballet school. I'll be the only boy there. Yeah. Do I want to do that? Yeah. Not really. So I always like thought, okay, I'm going to wait till I'm in Montreal to dance. And that happened when I was 19, when I moved to Montreal. But I've only started to dance when I was 20 or nearly 21.
Yeah.
But then I started to do very intensively. And after 4 years of intense training, like professional training, at 25, I went into the National Ballet School. And I finished there. I graduated at the National Ballet School. And then came back to Montreal, danced a little bit. I even created a company with two other people. I didn't have like a big career, but I've always loved to dance and I always kept training.
I'll just interrupt you a little bit. Yeah. And just so you know, I interrupt a little bit. Anyone that went to the Canadian Ballet School is a ballet star to me. So just so we're clear.
No, it's true. It's one of the best schools in the world. It's maybe one of the four big schools in the world, honestly. Yeah. So yes, when you graduate.
So it's not like you're just like some guy who took one class. Like,
No.
You know, exactly. So that's what I'm saying, that ballet
star. Even people, if I go to a class, they will recognize the signature of the National Ballet School within my body.
Yeah.
They will know like I'm that type of a dancer. Anyway, so but then quickly I went into yoga. Actually, it came when I started ballet because obviously I didn't do that kind of training when I was young, so it was not completely in my body. Let's say it was maybe in my bones and my structure, but in my muscle, it wasn't there. So one of my ballet teacher recommended me to do yoga. She said it would help you to find your body, to find the strength and to increase your flexibility. So I started right away and I used to be very intense with it because I saw the potential that it had to help my dance. So I used to do it in that time, like twice a day, 6 days a week. It was really intense. And that time in the year 2000, like one of my friends said, we were not doing yoga on the weekends.
Yeah.
We were doing yoga full time. We were full time yogis. So I took it this way.
Yeah.
So for now 17 years, I've trained even more longer than that for ballet, which I still do, and yoga for 17 years now. I'm into the field. And really early when I started to train into yoga, where I started to take class, I started also to teach. Because I was already teaching swimming, I was teaching dance, so I was already teaching kind of sport.
Yeah.
So my boss at the time at the Olympic Stadium asked me, do you want to teach? Because there's a lot of demand here, and you're the only one I can see who could teach.
And this is in the early days of yoga, before yoga kind of got the
big Montreal, boom. Yeah. There was maybe 5 studios.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how many? Dr. Bali, yeah. There was Ashtanga, there was Shivananda, yeah. And
how many would you estimate are now?
Oh my, more than 300, maybe 400.
Okay. Yeah,
okay. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
It's an increase of 400%. It's a boom.
Yeah. Before, and we'll go into the business of yoga and that. I'm really looking forward to your take on that. But coming back to swimming. What did you enjoy about swimming? What events were you in? And
I didn't go so much into the competition field.
Yeah.
Me and my brother used to swim.
Okay.
My brother went into competition, and me, I turned the other way. I went into lifeguard, teaching swimming, into all of that. And I went quite far. I went to do my ocean lifeguard. I used to teach how to be a lifeguard and how to be an instructor. I used to manage pool. So I went quite far into that. And I used to love it. I mean, it was my summer work.
Yeah.
It was my...
There's probably no better job than to hang out at the beach all day or at the pool or whatever.
Yeah. And it was so well paid at the time. Yeah. The salary, I think the minimum salary was $550 and I was at $11 already.
Yeah.
You know, so good.
Making it rain. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For a teenager to make that, it was wow, you know. But so swimming was always part of my life. It used to calm me down, used to keep me in shape, you know. Always, still, I swim less, but still I'm part of it too. Yeah. It's part of my life. Let's say.
Going back to yoga, what styles do you agree with more, or what styles do you practice or teach the most?
Yeah. Agree wouldn't be the good.
Yeah.
Term,
no, that's why I agree with. Yeah,
you know, when I first met, let's say, or encounter with yoga, the biggest thing here in Quebec was Shivananda style. You know, they were the first one who arrived to America.
Yeah.
And now we call it Hatha Yoga.
Okay, Hatha
Yoga. Which is not the good name for it, because Hatha Yoga is still, if you use the right term, it's all the physical yoga.
Okay.
But now it was connected with Shivananda, because Shivananda is the first one who arrived to America.
Yeah.
So people point out to Shivananda as Hatha Yoga.
Yeah.
But still, Ashtanga is Hatha Yoga. Iyengar is Hatha Yoga. All those styles are still Hatha Yoga. Anyway.
But just so you know, most people have no clue what the hell you're talking about now.
Yeah, anyway. Okay.
just so we're clear. Yeah.
But basically...
So they want to know, like, do you do power yoga? Do you do yin? Like, that's all they kind of know.
You'll get it. Anyway, Shivananda was a soft practice where we do about 12 basic posture and we do relaxation in between. But my teacher, who used to teach that style, started to do Iyengar, which is a much more rigid approach, very therapeutic, very precise, lots of posture, lots of series, very physically demanding and etc. And I used to really like that. I used to like the precision of that because I found it was as technical as ballet. And then in Montreal, there was a big trend at that time of Anusara. And Anusara was like a bit of a baby of Iyengar, very much a line-based yoga, but it was a new system created by John Fran, and it was a lot of workshop. But I always liked that because it was, their language was in spiral. And spiral is very connected to dance, since we're moving, it's circle, you know, dance is a circular movement, of course. So I connected with that a lot. And then it's when I moved to Toronto, when I was in the National Ballet School, that I discovered Ashtanga. And Ashtanga is the mother, let's say, of power yoga. So it's really this form that is vigorous, that is the connection between movement and breath. And I went into that a lot because as a dancer in its 20s, it was like, wow, you know, such a extase, you know, exalta.
Yeah.
So, and
exhilarating,
Yes, very much. And so I went into that quite a bit. I studied with the big teachers of Ashtanga, travel for that. But then when I came back to Montreal, I also discovered or went deeper into Iyengar, especially through a teacher that is still my teacher today, Ramanan Patel, who's in his 74, 75, I believe. So one of the first who taught Iyengar in America.
Is he here in Montreal?
No, he's in San Francisco.
Okay.
And I follow him. He comes sometime in Montreal. He goes to Toronto. So those are the places I would study with him. But now I go to Germany because in Germany he does a teacher training.
Okay.
Which is very rare. It's, I believe, will be his last teacher training. He doesn't do any more teacher training. He's too old to... Not too old, but that's his decision.
Anyway,
So it's a bit of a jump of generation for me because... after me or before me, the next generation who did teacher training with him are in their 60s.
Okay.
You know, yeah. So it's a very big opportunity to do that with him. So I've
taken a couple of your classes, which have been great. I wish you would teach more in Ottawa, and we'll work on that. But the really thing I like about your workshop is your attention to detail.
Mm.
And there are a lot of, and I'm not shitting on yoga instructors. I love yoga. Like, I do a lot of yoga on my own, but I really enjoy everyone's aspects of yoga. Yeah. But I really like that you try to go back to the basics and make them like as solid as possible. Mm-hmm. And like going back to, and make it like very practical, but also very technical.
Yes.
Which not a lot of yoga instructors will do, I think. A lot of them, like, it's, you see them on Instagram or Facebook, they're like doing a split and they're like, here's me. And it's like, well, that's great. But I think 99% of the people can't do the split. So that's great that you're showing off, but it's not really makes it accessible for anyone. Whereas you try to go back to the basics and, okay, let's nail these basics as possible. Like, which is what I really, because I'm not that flexible, but you made me realize that it's not about being flexible. It's about what can your body do and how can you become in touch more with that body. How would you describe your style of yoga or your style of teaching?
I wouldn't describe it as a style.
Okay.
So I believe we have to clarify that in yoga, or even in different description of the word yoga, there is speciality. We could name it this way, meaning you could be interested about the philosophy of yoga, which is much more connected to what we do in India, for example. You could be interested about Bhakti yoga, which is the form of devotion of yoga, much more religious aspect. You could be interested about the chanting, you know, or all those more spiritual or mystical approach of yoga. But here in the West, we're much more specialized, or we've developed a yoga that it's much more a postural approach or a physical, postural, modern approach to yoga. And in that way, it's not so much of a synonym of what we do in India, but much more of an homonym, you know, so same word, different meaning.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to be clear that there's a lot of teacher, but they offer different aspect of yoga. And I've decide not to create a style, but to specialize into one aspect of yoga, which is the asana. And the asana is the physical part of yoga. And within that physical part, I even specialize into the biomechanic, the whole, how do we do an asana? What are the building blocks to do correctly a posture? So that makes that my approach is very modern, contemporary, and focus on the postural aspect of the asana. So it's not so much of a method, or a style, but really understanding or using asana to understand your body, using asana to understand your spine, for example, using asana to perfection your posture, using asana as a tool to be better or to be well in your body, to be more functional with your body. So it's a functional approach to the postures that we do in yoga.
Very cool. And I think that's why we're very aligned, because it seems like chi running, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, is very similar to your approach to, and the way I teach chi running is very similar to approach the way you teach yoga in terms of going back to basics, posture, and all that kind of stuff. Before we get into that, you do a lot of work with different athletes, swimmers, tennis folks.
Yes, dancers, of course.
Dancers, yes, the obvious. how'd you get into that, and what does the athletes get out of that?
How did I got into it? It's I used to work at the Olympic Park, and so we used to have a lot of swimming competition. And so I used to watch them, and my friend, one friend in particular, he was practicing his jump. You know how they jump in the water to start a race? And to my vision, he didn't know how to jump. As a dancer, you know, our specialty, especially the men, you know, the boys, they do, the girls, they do point, the guys, we do jump. So I saw him and I was like, Guillaume, you should learn how to jump. Because if you jump better, you'll get like, you know, of course, 1 meter more in your jump. And he's like, oh yeah, really? So basically we started to do an exchange. He would teach me his way of jumping, and then I would show him, and he's like, oh my God, how can you do that? But I said, Guillaume, I'm not a swimmer, but I'm a jumper. So then I started to show him how to use his feet. And his coach saw that. And his coach was like, can you teach that to everyone. So basically, I didn't start to do yoga for swimmer. I started to do the jumping ballet for swimmer.
Okay.
But then there was a whole other aspect, the breath, the shoulder, all of the mechanic that the swimmer needs that this I took in yoga. Yeah. So I started to use yoga as a tool for swimmer that they can use as a kind of complementary technique. And this coach was very avant-gardist because we met, I think it's been 11 or 12 years that we worked together.
And before it was cool to do yoga for athletes.
Of course, it was in 2004, 2005 or something that he took me with his team.
Yeah.
And he always kind of kept me as his secret key, you know. He didn't want me to teach yoga at other teams even.
Okay.
Oh, this is my cuckoo, sorry.
Okay, it's okay.
So, so it's funny because one time I asked him, oh, do you mind if I go to teach with that team? And anyway, in that time, he was a bit, he wanted to keep me for himself, basically. Yeah. Now I teach for others, but
you're the secret weapon.
That's it. That's what he wanted.
Yeah.
But then I was like, look, if you want me to be your secret woman, you have to increase my salary, meaning pay me like a year's salary, which he couldn't do. So he let me go anyway. Yeah.
And what do these athletes get out of it?
You know, the first... Okay, I will tell you two things. First is the coach. What he told me, the first thing, he told me my athletes are capable of recording or absorbing the correction that I give them much quicker. For example, if I tell them to put their hand a little further in the water, they will be capable to do it because now they know where or how do their hands function, how to put in practice
awareness.
The correction. Yeah, it's awareness. That's what he saw right away.
Yeah.
But the first thing that a kid told me, he brought me back his medal because he told me, you taught me how to breathe. And because of breathing, because of my breath, I won, you know. So he gave me his medal.
Yeah.
I was so touched. I was like, wow, you know. Yeah. And of course, breathing and swimming is a key element, you know. But there's more than that. I mean, we prevent a lot of injury by working opposite muscle. So let's say the swimmer, if you think of swimming with your arm in your shoulder, you're always spiraling inward. So we call it inner rotation.
Yeah.
So in yoga, we do a lot of outer rotation in the shoulder to balance that. So that's just one example to counteract with their pattern so that we prevent injury. Then we teach them a lot how to relax because athletes need to tap into recuperation so that they can swim again. Let's say they can be back in shape faster.
Yeah. Recovery is huge.
Yes.
Especially for like higher end athletes. Cause they get, and especially pro athletes get paid to recover now.
Yes. That's
because if you recover like a champ, then you get to train like a champ. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're on the good kind of way up. Yeah. And if you don't recover correctly, then you're on the way down. You're it's dangerous to be, how do you call it in English? Surentraînement?
Overtraining.
Overtraining. Yeah. So good recuperation, you're not overtraining.
Yeah. And
so we're a key element for that.
Yeah. And as I get older, it's like, that's kind of like my recovery is key. And I've actually did a podcast about that, about how I relax now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a huge part of my, I don't really train anymore. Yeah. I just kind of, I try to be active, but recovery and relaxation are huge parts of my day to day now. Whereas before it was like, no, let's do hard workouts.
Yes,
like,
of course.
But then you realize you can't go to the well too many times, right?
Yeah. The other aspect when I work with Swimming Canada, this coach, I wouldn't remember his name, but he told me that nowadays what they try to create is not swimmers, but it's athletes. So they want to create good athletes that are complete.
Yeah.
And this is what we see. When you see like a talented swimmer, he's a talented athlete.
Yeah.
Most of the kids that I see that are, let's say, fast in swimming, they will do tennis good. They will be coordinate. They have a global capacity of movement in their body, like a good movement vocabulary.
Yeah. They call it physical literacy.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like if you... You're coordinated, you're aware, you're body aware, and it's, they're really, I think now they're really trying to teach that as opposed to back in the day, it was like, oh, you're good at baseball, more baseball. Yeah, so it's like now, and that's where I try to do now is like, just play a bunch of different stuff.
Of course.
And it's just, part of it's the fun and part of it is the cross training. And, but part of it is just like, if you get better at hockey,
of course,
or skating or running, then you get better at like a lot of transferable skills.
I use that a lot even in my teacher trainings. I always say to my student, if you want to be a good teacher, like a good asana, yoga teacher, then you have to be a good movement specialist. You have to be able to run, to bike, any movement you should be able to do. Because if you're a real movement specialist, there is no movement that you're afraid of, you know?
Yeah. Very cool. Going back to you, what are your movements like these days?
I love to do handstand. I'm a crazy kind of addicted to extremes, of course, because I did ballet and ballet is very extreme. I still love to do ballet, but now my aim with ballet is more to see if I can use the softness or the intelligence of yoga, or let's say the precision of yoga, into my ballet so that I can do ballet in a very much more refined place where I can do it until 60 or 70. Yeah. I don't know. Like, do you understand? Like, with less injury factor or less strain on my body, etc. So that's how I work with my ballet. And my handstand is just like a passion. I just love to be upside down. I love the aspect of concentration. If you're not there for a second, you fall.
Yeah.
You know, because being on one hand, you need the full concentration. So I think that's the main thing that I love about it. But it's also how far can I push my body? And I prefer to do it in something else than yoga. Because I see people doing that in yoga and it's like, I'm not sure if yoga is meant for that. I don't think yoga is meant to push your body to the limit. I think yoga can be a tool. If, for example, you're a circus artist and you want to push your body to the limit, then use yoga to do it safely. But don't use yoga to push your body to the limit, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a bit the difference that I'm making. But I still have to run, to bike. So, but that's more punctual. That's when it's nice outside and when, you know, I have time.
And you just like to be active overall?
Yeah, overall, yeah.
And still swimming?
Still swimming, yeah, once in a while. When I do camp with the swimmer, I swim with them all the time. I mean, they do three length and I do one, but I still swim with them. And they're always surprised because they always see me throughout the year.
Yeah.
In studio.
Yeah.
And then when I come in the summer or in their Christmas vacation, they have like an intensive and I come with my swimsuit and they're like, oh, Julian, you're swimming. And I'm going, of course I'm swimming. You know? So,
well, again, because you can relate a little bit more. Yes, like they know you might not be as talented as them in the foot pool, but then you at least you're, you know.
Yeah.
Going back to a little bit what we talked about earlier, what are your thoughts on the business of yoga these days?
That's a hard question.
I know, I'm steering the pot here.
It's a delicate question.
I know, and I'm steering the pot. But I know we've had a couple chats offline, and I just, whatever you can say, whatever you want to say, like, because
the things that I would like to say, I cannot say, I cannot tell them. But other people could, you know, say it for me. For example, there's a guy that I saw on Facebook posted that very nice video. Meaning nice, aesthetically nice, was a beautiful woman in a small swimsuit, even like a tang, how do you say
like
that?
A bikini bottom?
A bikini, yeah, bikini. Okay. She was on a surfboard doing yoga, but meaning in a very sensual way, let's say, beautiful sun on a lake and everything. And he reposted that video and it was written, oh, when I click on that video, I thought it was yoga. But listening to it, I discovered it was soft porn. So that's something I would love to say, but I can't.
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm in the yoga field.
Yeah.
So I cannot, you know, blame the people, but I see that we're misleading people and pretending that we're doing a spiritual practice, which is basically simply an asana practice, simply a physical practice. That, yes, of course, it can help. It can enhance your spirituality in a way that it will help you to meditate. It will help you to keep your body healthy. But I don't think that it's intrinsic to a physical posture that there is spirituality within it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that you're doing Trikonasana, which is a triangle posture, that suddenly you'll be enlightened. Of course, we understand that. But subtly, in the image that we receive from yoga, it's selling that. It's selling that kind of happiness that they promise from doing a physical practice, which is absolutely untrue. It's absolutely, I don't know, unfair even. because I think of the people that has inspired me the most in terms of meditation, and they're actually all people. Like, you know, my teacher that has inspired me the most. So she's 100 years old and she knows nothing about the body. She hasn't, she doesn't have a physical posture. She doesn't have a physical practice. She's a yogi in her mind. She's a meditator. She's a powerful thinker. That's what inspires me. And I think we create confusion when we try to sell a physical posture promising that it will give you a spiritual practice. It's totally false. Yeah.
But I heard if you buy a $150 pants, you can be spiritual in 20 minutes. Yeah.
And you might be more comfortable to do your meditation practice, but it will not give you a meditation.
I know. I don't know if you've seen a J.P. Sears video.
No. Yes. Like he's laughing about that. Yeah, of course. It's great. And I saw a few of his kind video. Of
because people, you're right, like they think they go to yoga class, they're a better person.
Of course.
And I mean, you can be, you can, but again, you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's like, it's part of it, but it's not the end all be all.
Or you can make it part of it, but it's not intrinsic to it. You can make it, let's say, meditative. If you bring the aspect of concentration, if you bring the aspect of breath, but the same way as if you go for a run and you're in the zone, you put your music, you breathe, and you're with yourself.
Yeah.
That could be a good meditation as much as your yoga practice could be. But it's not intrinsic to the posture or to the practice. It depends what's happening in your head, in your mind.
One more somewhat controversial before we kind of jump off the topic. What would you like yoga to be more like?
Honest. More honest. More simple and more intelligent. You know?
Can you elaborate on that?
So more simple. I think we're trying to sell a very complex system and that gives like this thought that only when you achieve a very complex posture, you will have benefit. But the truth is that all the way that you're, all the progression or all the step that you take towards a posture has the same benefit as doing the posture itself. So if we would simplify the asana practice, that will bring a great benefit to many people, a great release or a great, you know, a more real aspect, meaning that yoga will be much more accessible to all. Sure. More intelligent physically. I'm talking about more biomechanic. I think a lot of nowadays I can see more and more teacher training, but I feel we need to train much, 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 much more. Nowadays, the basic training to be a yoga teacher is 200 hours, which is to me ridiculous. It's laughing about us because 200 hours, if you think about it, it's 1 month or 1 month and a half full time. It's not even a university session. So where are you going with 200 hours? What can you teach, really? And often in those 200 hours, there was maybe 20 hours on philosophy. There was maybe 20 hours on chanting. There was maybe another 20 hours on the history. Then what is left of asana? Sometimes there's 15 hours of physiology and anatomy. What can you teach with that? You know, it's a sacrilege, you know. Then senior teacher, they say they have a 1,000 hour. Still 1,000, it's baby step, you know. So this has to be changed. This has to be, I think yoga instructor, teacher has to really take on the responsibility that they are teaching a physical practice. Although yes, you can agree or you can have your opinion that yoga is more than that, but what you are teaching is a physical practice. So get in touch with your physical, like with physical knowledge. So that's what I would love to see happen more.
How many hours have you think you've estimated, like just about?
I've made a promise to myself that every year I take training.
Yeah.
And it's been 17 years.
Yeah.
So I've never missed a year. So for example, now this year I'm going in Germany to do about, you know, a good 100 hour, you know, training. And so that's for 17 years. Yeah. You can make a little calculation. Yeah. And that's just the formal training.
Yeah.
You know,
because you've also been teaching for 17 years.
I've been teaching. Yeah. That doesn't count my ballet training. Yeah. That doesn't count my swimmer training. Yeah. That doesn't count my university.
Yeah.
That I also study a little bit in therapy. I did some collaboration with osteopath, with physiotherapist. I did my own work. I read. I studied biomechanic with a professional here in biomechanic, etc. And so it's thousands of hours.
Yes.
To me, this is
so
just
you're, so what you're saying is you're a senior instructor.
Giving the age of yoga here in, let's say, in Canada, we can consider that. Because if you think about it, 17 years ago, the people who were there 17 years ago, we basically know each other because we're just a small bunch of people who was there in that time. So, yes, I'm considered part of those senior teacher. But if you would switch me profession, yes, of course, I'm a fairly young teacher. You know, like we had this discussion with a studio. He wanted to write master class. You know, to me, I said, look, wait another like 10 years when I'll have 25 year, 30 years experience. Then we'll call it master class. Call it advanced class, you know. But anyway, then finally he did call it master class. But because there is very little other master, you know, let's say. So,
One more question before I let you go, because I know you're a busy guy and a lot of demands on your time.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. What does wellness mean to you?
I think there's many aspects to it. It's a beautiful word. It's very attractive to me. It's something that we should nourish, constantly nourish, because I think I would connect it with balance. And my ballet teacher would tell us to stop looking for balance, because balance doesn't exist. Like physically in ballet, when you're trying to be in balance on your tiptoe, you're never balanced. You're always managing the imbalance. You know, so muscularly, you're always active, and internally, you're always looking, you're always adjusting. So I think wellness is similar to that, which is something that you constantly nourish. And there's many aspects to it. There's your lifestyle, there's what you eat, there's the way you sleep, there's the exercise, there's your mind, there's your inner world, there's, you know, your relationship is a big part of it, your family relationship. I think all of this can be encompassed in wellness. But the main thing is whatever you put into that has to be nourished constantly.
Yeah, it's not, unfortunately, it's not something that you get to be like, oh, I'm well. Okay, no. I'm good.
Because it's the law of entropy. So if there's no, if there's not an exterior force, it goes to deteriorate. So you need to constantly nourish.
Well, I've enjoyed this chat. I've always enjoy your chats. Looking forward to teaching with you again some more in Montreal, and hoping to get
and maybe in Ottawa.
Before we go, again, thank you very much for your time. This has been great. We could do this for hours, but I know, but I want to be respectful of your time.
No, but it's good. It's not often that I get the time to talk about the other aspect or the underneath vision under my work. So thank you.
And where can people find you on the socials, because I know you're active?
My business is called Asana Performance. So we can find me on my website, of course, asanaperformance.ca. I have a Facebook account, Asana Performance. Facebook Asana Performance. I have my Instagram, which is my name, Julien J, Asana Performance. You can find me there. And those are basically the one I sustain.
Okay. And then I'll link all those in the show notes that people can just click and kick to it. And again, thank you very much.
Thanks to you.
This has been great. And we probably have to have a part two of this maybe a little later in the summer.
Okay.
You've been listening to me, your host, Eric Kalar. This has been Wellness Wednesday. Until next time, until next week, be well.